Welcome to the markets, sponsored by the CME Group. Hello, everyone. Along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson with our weekly review of activity on Wall Street, in the grain market, and in the livestock market. Here on the markets, our report that takes a look, first of all, at what happened on Wall Street this week and where we ended the day with a rally. The three major U.S. stock indices rose more than 1% today after weaker-than-expected U.S. wage growth helped to calm investor fears about rising interest rates and inflation, although the S&P 500 and the Dow Industrial still posted losses for the week. But as we look at today's closing numbers, the Dow Industrial Average ending the day at 24,262, a gain of 332 points for the day. The S&P 500 gained 33 points for the day and ends the week at 2663, and the NASDAQ ends the week at 7209 after gaining 121 points on the last trading day of the week. Looking at the volatility index, the CBOE down a little more than a point, and the volatility index ended at 1477. So let's take a look at some of the activities that influenced Wall Street this week. First of all, the three major U.S. stock indices rose more than 1% Friday after weaker-than-expected U.S. wage growth helped to calm investor fears. Apple provided the biggest boost as it jumped to a record high of $184.25 during the session after Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway disclosed it had raised its stake in the iPhone maker. Apple shares ended Friday's session up 3.9% at $183.83. Company stock surged to its greatest weekly percentage gain since October of 2011. At the market open today, U.S. stocks had fallen after the Labor Department reported the unemployment rate dropped to near a 17-and-a-half-year low of just 3.9%. And quoting one of the traders today, it's a rather happy circumstance we find ourselves in. That's according to Jamie Cox. He said, everyone has a job who wants one, and we don't have the negative piece of it, which is the inflation piece. For the week, the Dow lost 0.2%. The S&P 500 fell about 0.25%, second straight week of losses for both indices, but by contrast, the NASDAQ gained 1.25% on the strength of the rally in tech stocks today. All the 11 major S&P sectors were higher, and 29 of the 30 Dow members were in the black, with Chevron Corporation the lone exception. Pandora Media shares up 19.8% after the music streaming service provider reported a smaller-than-expected quarterly loss. Shares of CBS Corporation up 9% after the media company topped revenue and profit estimates for the first quarter. So all in all, we ended the week with a mixed close for the week, but all in all, the market showing some pretty good strength on Wall Street. So now we look ahead to next week and what's on tap. Well, again, we'll continue with earnings reports. Tuesday, Walt Disney Company expected to report a rise in second quarter revenue driven by the massive successes of Marvel superhero movie Black Panther. Disney's theme parks and resorts business also expected to contribute to its revenue growth, and investors will be looking out for any updates on the Disney-Fox deal. Separately, Discovery, the owner of Discovery Channel and Animal Planet, is scheduled to report its first quarter results on the same day. Now, other activity next week. The U.S. inflation data will be under the spotlight. The Labor Department expected to report on Thursday that the consumer price index went up 0.3% in April after slipping 0.1% in March, its first and largest drop since May of 2017. The core CPI, which strips out the volatile food and energy components, is forecast to have increased 0.2% after a similar gain was reported in the previous month. Separately, the Labor Department will likely report on Wednesday that its producer price index for final demand rose 0.3% in April. That's compared to a similar rise in March. Take food and energy out of the picture, and the producer price index expected to show a 0.2% increase. On the same day, data from the Commerce Department expected to show that wholesale inventories rose 0.5% in March. Meanwhile, the Labor Department scheduled to release data on export and import prices for April on Friday. The import prices are expected to have increased 0.5% in the month after it remained unchanged in March. Export prices likely to have risen 0.3% in December compared to a similar increase in the month before. And continuing our look at next week's earning report schedule, Wednesday, 21st Century Fox scheduled to report third quarter results, with the company likely to report an increase in profit, helped by increases in the fees it collects from cable and satellite distributors. Chipmaker NVIDIA will likely report an increase in first quarter revenue and profit on Thursday, helped by surging demand for its graphics chips used in data centers and in gaming devices. Analysts and investors will watch out for comments on data center business and cryptocurrency mining. Then some of the other activity that we'll watch next week on Wall Street. Chipmaker NVIDIA will likely report an increase in first quarter revenue and profit on Thursday, helped by surging demand for its graphics chips used in data centers and in gaming devices. Valeant Pharmaceuticals International forecast to report a drop in first quarter profit on Tuesday as the drug maker combats competition for several of its major drugs and frees up cash and reduces debt burden by selling some businesses. Investors will be focusing on the company's eye care products and its treatments for gastrointestinal diseases, as well as its plans for future growth. On the same day, generic drug maker Endo International will report its first quarter results, weeks after announcing a surprise acquisition of injectables company Somerset Therapeutics. Endo's generics unit has suffered from an industry trend of persistently low prices for several years. On Thursday, Wall Street Journal owner News Corporation forecast to post an increase in third quarter revenue driven by strength in its digital real estate business. Investors will watch out for comments on the company's advertising revenue and costs. News and information company Thomson Reuters, who provides us with much of the content for this broadcast, expected to report first quarter results on Friday. Video game publisher Electronic Arts expected to post an increase in fourth quarter results and profit on Tuesday, driven by strength in its digital business. Analysts and investors will be looking out for their forecast, as well as details on EA's slate for later this year. Wednesday, Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta President Rafael Bostic is expected to speak on the economic outlook and monetary policy before the World Affairs Council in Jacksonville. Meanwhile, Federal Reserve Bank of St. Louis President James Bullard will give a presentation on the U.S. economy and the monetary policy before the Springfield Business Development Corporation meeting on Friday. Hotel chain Marriott International likely will report an increase in first quarter profit and revenue on Tuesday. Economic growth fueled strong global travel demand for that company. Some of the other reports, shareholders of American International Group expected to vote on compensation for new CEO Brian Duperreault and other executives at the insurer's annual meeting in New York on Wednesday. Canada-based pipeline company Enbridge scheduled to report its first quarter results on Thursday. The heavily indebted company is planning asset sales to reduce its leverage. Coty Incorporated likely to report a decline in third quarter profit on Wednesday due to higher costs and weak demand for some of its high-end perfumes and hair color products. On Thursday, Magna International expected to post a profit that would miss analyst expectations, likely on weaker demand from North America. So a lot of activity continues in the earnings reports. Tyson Foods forecast to report an increase in second quarter profits, helped by strong demand for its beef and prepared foods. And the U.S. Federal Reserve reports the outstanding credit extended to American consumers in March. Consumer credit expected to have increased to $16.50 billion in the month from a reading of $10.60 billion in February. Then let's look at the oil price situation, because oil prices rose about 2% to end the trading week on Friday. U.S. crude hitting its highest in more than 3 years as global supplies remained tight and the market awaited news from Washington on possible new U.S. sanctions against Iran. Light crude oil on Friday settled up $1.29 at $69.72 a barrel. It touched a session peak of $69.97 for the first time since November of 2014. And it's on track to gain just over 2.33% for the week. So that's a look at some of the activity in the U.S. market. And Fed officials are keeping an open mind on rate hikes, showing little concern on inflation. Two Federal Reserve officials who are currently voting members of the U.S. Central Bank's rate-setting committee said Friday they were keeping an open mind on the total number of interest rate increases needed for the year. And San Francisco Fed President John Williams and Atlanta Fed President Rafael Bostic both said separately that neither was concerned about the prospect of inflation overshooting the central bank's 2% goal. The Fed in March raised benchmark interest rates to between 1.5% and 1.75%, and currently forecasts another 2 increases this year. Williams said a total of 3 or 4 rate hikes this year remained the base case, saying in an interview with broadcaster CNBC, "I still think that's the right way to think about it, given the continued improvement in the economy." So all in all, not a bad market week, despite some of the foreign influences, like the ongoing debate with China on the tariffs and that sort of thing. That probably impacted agricultural trade as much, if not more, than other trade as well. But again, for the week, the Dow Industrial Average at 34,262, a gain of 332 points today. The S&P 500 at 2663, a gain of 33 points for today. And the NASDAQ Composite ending the week at 7209 after gaining 121 points for the day. Well, we'll have more for you, including Max Armstrong's visit with David Hightower when we continue on the markets.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Well, David Hightower joins us here to talk about the market situation and especially about China this weekend. The Hightower Report. You've been to China several times, sir. We were seeking your insight here as to what we've been seeing there going on in recent days. What's your take on our trade dispute with China?
Well, I think Wilbur Ross hit the nail on the head when he suggested that, listen, they have more to lose from this than us. We have a huge deficit with them. They realize they have some structural changes, and they, like automobiles, they've been charging 25% tariff, and really the media is not focused on that. So I think we'll come away with a deal, and there won't be a trade war.
These trade disputes have a way of working themselves out in most instances, do they not? I mean, if we look back at the history, of course, it's hard to base what's going on with China and our relationship there on anything that's happened in the past, but they generally are not long-lasting, don't have a long tail to them.
Well, usually there's not a war, but, I mean, with this president, I mean, he could cross that line. But, again, I think Wilbur Ross also hit it on the head when he said, if they quit buying our beans, they just can't find enough of them somewhere else. So some of their threats are veiled.
Some people are saying that that's not a very good assessment of the situation from the standpoint of that they have to have our beans. But you've been over there, and you say they need our soybeans.
Well, they have a huge livestock herd to continue to feed. And again, I have a different perspective in that it doesn't matter whose they use. They're going to use them from the world equation, and that helps our domestic price in the end.
We do have some new numbers coming up in a few days, the USDA World Supply Demand Report. Is there anything out of that that you're expecting in terms of significant shifts, David?
Well, South America is obviously going to be pared down. I think you'll get another upward adjustment in demand. I think you'll see more of a positive result from corn than soybeans. But we've come from a multi-year bear market fear to possibly having a market this year.
This sets us up for that possibility if we run into any weather problems as we get on into pollination, right?
Exactly. But in corn, I mean, it may not take a weather problem. I mean, it could be a boring market, but prices, we could see 50 cents higher. But I would caution producers, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. They've been given some higher prices here. This is a year in which you take that, maybe replace it with some kind of cheaper look in the market, like calls. They're very cheap, very cheap.
Generally, the end of spring and the beginning of summer, there's that narrow opportunity for price prospect there from the standpoint of the producer pricing that crop, but you don't want to miss it, correct?
Absolutely. And when you look at the reward of taking the risk from slightly higher action, I mean, maybe it's not there this year. Creeping prices maybe in the end result will be beneficial. But a lot of farmers can price more than once during the year. So I would price some.
Some of the grain sorghum producers would say, yes, we've been roughed up in this trade dispute already. What would you tell them?
Well, I would also say that watch what China's doing instead of what they're saying. And I think the Trump administration has also indicated that they will protect the farmer. And from an economic perspective, he's really done what he said. It's just all the other political and commentary that hasn't lived up to our expectation.
Give us some insight with the agriculture sector in China, and especially those stockpiles they have. We hear a lot about that. In fact, some of our trade executives with the U.S. Trade Representative's Office have pointed to that residual supply of grain that China holds that is so large, but we're not sure how large because they're not transparent about it.
Well, 6 months ago, we were seemingly denial of any kind of quality issue, or that it was half the world's supply. I mean, the market was fully convinced in that. Now we've slowly eroded that down, and the stories of quality issues are certainly starting to come out, and we're seeing imports of corn into China. Now, why would they do that if they have half the world's ending stocks?
But that isn't uncommon. We've seen it in the past, have we not? The Chinese have sold corn, you know, from one part of the country to another, and yet imported corn at the same time.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of passing because, you know, that used to, in the old days, that used to be because they didn't have the transportation inside the country. And also, there's other signs like the amount of oil being imported, the amount of ethanol that they're coming for. So I don't know. It's just, I think, wrong to assume a lower demand.
The ravenous demand is there, and you think despite all of the saber rattling and the trade dispute here, they're going to be there, they're going to be a customer.
And I think we'll be having that revelation within the next couple weeks.
Our thanks to David Hightower, the Hightower Report.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
As we take a look at the agricultural market story, we had our first of what will be several crop tours during this growing season, this one taking a tour of winter wheat country. The 2018 Wheat Quality Council's Hard Winter Wheat Tour across Kansas wrapped up on the 3rd of May, and during the 3 days of wheat scouting, tour participants traveled 6 routes from Manhattan to Colby to Wichita and back to Manhattan. And this year's tour hosted 95 participants from 3 countries and 30 states in 24 vehicles while traveling across the state. The 3-day average yield for the fields that were calculated came in at 37 bushels an acre. And while an estimated 7.8 million acres of wheat were planted in the fall, most of Kansas has been in a severe drought since October. And tour participants saw wheat that was significantly behind schedule, with most areas 3 or 4 or more weeks behind normal development. Not only that, but the wheat is short. That will make harvesting difficult. Head size is determined right after the wheat comes out of dormancy, and most of the heads, according to those joining the tour, were small, and that will negatively affect yields. Abandoned acres also, they said, will likely be higher than normal, but how much depends on the next few weeks. Many tour participants had never stepped foot in a wheat field before. There are the millers, the bakers, the food processors, and the traders who buy the wheat that Kansas farmers grow. And if these fields make it to harvest, the resulting crop will go into breads, but also a number of other food items, from snack cakes to donuts to seasonings to batters and coatings for fish, chicken, and appetizers. Scouts reported seeing some disease pressure, mostly in the early stages, including some reports of stripe rust, leaf rust, barley yellow dwarf, and wheat streak mosaic virus. And the next few weeks will be critical to the crop. Dr. Romulo Lolata of Kansas State University, extension specialist in wheat, reported that if the weather is similar to 2016, where rains began on May 2nd, he said we could have an average crop. But despite the drought stress that year, grain fill conditions were very good. And in addition, scouts from Nebraska and Colorado met the group in Colby, Kansas, to give reports from their states. The estimate for the Nebraska wheat crop, 43.7 bushels, or 43.7 million bushels, down from 46.92 bushels last year. Average yield is estimated at 43 bushels per acre. In Colorado, the estimated yield was only 35 bushels per acre. Production in Colorado estimated at 70 million bushels, down from 86.9 million bushels a year ago. Scouts from Oklahoma reported that the state's production is estimated at 58.4 million bushels, which is half of a normal crop. And while 4.1 million acres were seeded last fall, only 2.3 million are estimated to make it to harvest because of drought conditions, poor root systems, and few tillers and small heads. So, interesting wheat tour by a record number of people, and apparently a pretty good representation of the geography of wheat country here in the United States. And so we'll be looking at other crop evaluations by traveling groups, and that, of course, will take place during the next several months as the corn and soybean crops move toward maturity. As we take a look at what happened in the market this week, soybean futures fell today on Friday. Disappointment that trade talks between Washington and Beijing did not make more progress toward a deal to resolve a mounting trade dispute that has cut into crop sales to China. Prices remained, as China's news agency said, disagreements between the world's top two economists remained relatively big. Over the past decade, fast-rising demand from China has fueled a sharp rise in production of U.S. soybeans, which are set to overtake corn as the country's most widely planted crop for the first time in 35 years. Soybeans were the most valuable U.S. agricultural export to China last year, worth $12 billion, and U.S. government data shows China purchases 62% of the American soy exports. Then as we take a look at livestock futures during this past week, live cattle futures on Friday, pressure from funds that sold or rolled June positions into back months before similar moves lasting 5 days beginning on Monday. There may be some concern about a tsunami of cattle, according to Steve Wagner, a hedging analyst, but he said reduced cattle weights suggest feedlots are marketing cattle earlier than planned. We saw the June cattle contract ending the day down 55 cents Friday, and that put it at $106.05 for the week. And as we looked at some of the other positions in the market, again, prices rose 1% on Thursday on unfounded rumors that China and the United States had struck a trade deal. Turned out that that certainly was not the case. So as we look ahead to next week, we'll probably see a pretty good trading volume as some of the funds try to even up their positions. The grain market, soybeans stumbled, and so coming on Monday, we'll be starting the soybean trade at $10.27 a bushel on the May contract, down 15¾ cents this week. The July corn contract down 2 cents this week at 406¼. And again, the wheat crop taking a heavy hit. The July wheat contract down 13¾ cents, ending the week at $5.26¼ a bushel. So that's the story as we look at the markets for this week. But we'll open a new chapter again next week. And we thank you, as always, for joining us. Max Armstrong and I'm Orion Samuelson here on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.